What is going on, everybody? Welcome on in to the Heat Check Fantasy Podcast, powered by Number Fire. That is right here on numberfire.com. And of course, the Number Fire Podcast Network, because we're getting you set for week 14 of the NFL season and breaking down our favorite plays on the main slate. My name is Jim Sonnes. I am a senior writer and analyst for Number Fire, joined here as always by Brandon Gadula. He is a senior editor and analyst for Number Fire. Brandon, we are on to week number 14. Some playoff races are shaping up. Big divisional games this weekend. So how are you doing?
My adjective for today was going to be just ready, because there's a lot to dig into, but I had to change it to like something closer to disturbed, because before the podcast, you told me that you plug your headphones into your microphone to record, and I tried that, and then I could like hear myself, and I sounded like I was half robot, half like on the radio, and I'm still kind of just I'm still shaken up a bit.
See, my background is in radio, so if I can't hear myself talking, I will assume that I'm not talking. It's a very weird thing. Like, I have to, I lost a cord for my over-ear headphones, and that was like the worst day of my life, because I can't use them right now because I don't have that cord. So I have to wear like ear-in headphones. But like when I have the over-ear headphones, it feels like I'm in a cocoon of like sound. And it's hard to describe, but like I can't feel comfortable talking without that.
I don't know. It's creepy. It was distracting me. It's like that voice scrambler thing that people put on, and
it feels like you're a deity. Like you just know everything because you can hear your voice so loud, and it's like it feels great. I don't know how you don't dig it.
I probably should. It would be like the King's Speech. I couldn't get in my own head.
I need to see that still.
It was very good. Mm-hmm. I watch hardly any movies, but I would recommend that one.
Yeah. All right. I have a lot of movies I need to watch, a lot of TV I need to watch. Not that I don't watch enough already, but I have a long list of things that are required viewing for January through March, which is basically my summer, which is weird given that I live in Syracuse, New York. But, like, whatever. I think I'm going to add that.
Yeah, speaking of long lists, though, looking at this injury list for this week.
It's, like, it's long, but it's also impactful. And it's, like, not to complain about my dynasty team, because I know you don't care, but I have like AJ Green's gone, Melvin Gordon's gone, it's very potentially gone, Emmanuel Sanders gone, like a lot of bad stuff to talk about this week, Brandon. We're going to break down the injuries in just 1 second, but first, a quick reminder that we drew for our iTunes contest winner back on Monday, and our winner was Bill Fisher. So if you are Bill Fisher, left a comment actually on our SoundCloud page. Interesting for this week. I tossed him in because he asked to be included. So Bill Fisher, if you left a comment on our SoundCloud page, hit me up. Email me, jim@numberfire.com. We'll get you hooked up with Number Fire Premium for an entire year. If you did not win, do not worry. We'll draw again at the beginning of January for a free year of Number Fire Premium, and you can win Number Fire Premium via our free play, which we'll talk about after the injuries discussion. We'll recap what went down on Monday. You can get all these podcasts by subscribing to the Number Fire Daily Fantasy Podcast feed on Spotify, iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, the Google Play Store, and the TuneIn app. Ratings and reviews always very much appreciated as well. Let's take a look at the injuries for Week 14, starting off with the Steelers, who gave us some clarity here. They ruled out James Conner for Week 14 due to an ankle injury. They're facing the Raiders, and that's always a plus, but head coach Mike Tomlin also said they plan on using a committee with Jalen Samuels and Stephen Ridley. Samuels said he will start, but Ridley will mix in. We'll talk more about the Steelers in the trends section. Emmanuel Sanders went down in practice on Wednesday with a torn Achilles tendon, so his season is unfortunately done. That stinks. Sanders vacates a bunch of targets in this offense, and they're facing the 49ers. We'll talk more about that team in the trend section as well. Melvin Gordon missed practice on Wednesday, making it seem like he will likely miss his second straight game. Austin Eckler got the start last week and played most of the snaps, but Justin Jackson, the ball carrier, outcarried Austin Eckler 6-1 in the fourth quarter due to the fact that he's awesome. We'll discuss these two guys and which ones we are comfortable using in the section on bookmaker info. AJ Green is having surgery on his toe. He's now done for the year. The Bengals are on the road to face the Chargers. Brandon, are you considering any of their players, or is it all about the Chargers defense at $4,600?
I do love me some Chargers defense this week, but I think that we could potentially run back some of those stacks with either Tyler Boyd or possibly CJ Uzomah. He's been getting a lot of he has a team high 17 of Jeff Driskel's 74 attempts, if you really need to roll the dice there. I don't actually know what his price is because I hate tight end, but I wouldn't rule that out entirely.
17 targets, 40 yards for CJ Uzomah because he's terrible. He's not terrible. I shouldn't say that. He is not an efficient player for fantasy. There we go. That's better. Yeah. I probably will not use any Bengals, to be honest. Driskel looked terrible last week. He's facing a defense that has Joey Bosa. Their left tackle, Cordy Glenn, is also banged up. So if I do use Chargers, I'm pretty okay not running it back personally. The 49ers have ruled out Matt Breida for week 14 as they host the Denver Broncos. We will talk about Jeffrey Wilson, who is $5,600 in the trend section today. Greg Olsen is done for the year after rupturing his plantar fasciitis last week for the Panthers. Olsen had 15.9% of the Panthers' targets after returning from his previous injury through week 12. Brandon, how does Olsen's injury influence your view on the rest of the Panthers' pass catchers?
I think really, I mean, Devin Funchess was more situational last week. I'm not sure how much he'll play this week, if that'll sort of change. But I guess, if anything, it just makes me more confident with DJ Moore and potentially Curtis Samuel, who's been pretty darn good the past few weeks.
Yeah, on DJ Moore, keep track on Denzel Ward this week. He didn't practice Wednesday because he is in concussion protocol. And if he can't go, that is a huge upgrade for DJ Moore at $6,300. And Moore, honestly, like Brandon said, might not need that upgrade to be viable because of the extra targets that are available. But I think that Olsen being out upgrades me on DJ Moore, especially if Denzel Ward is out, but also Christian McCaffrey. He's had a stupid workload, basically, ever since the injury started to accumulate for the pass catchers with the Torrey Smith injury. He has 25% of the targets, 35% of the red zone targets. So I think Moore and McCaffrey are the two guys who I'd bump up most there with Olsen out. The Buccaneers are considering holding wide receiver DeSean Jackson out for the rest of the year due to his thumb injury. That's according to Jenna Lane of ESPN. With DeSean Jackson out last week, Chris Godwin topped 100 yards, played more than 80% of the snaps. We know he's super talented. So Brandon, assuming that Jackson does sit again, how much Godwin is too much Godwin?
Maybe there isn't too much Chris Godwin, but I guess if I'm being more serious, I still have a little bit of a concern just with how that team distributes their targets. I always have nightmares of like the Mike Evans game, the Adam Humphrey stealing two touchdowns game. We know that Cameron Brate can score touchdowns. So, you know, it's like he's going to get 50% of the targets. He's not a Kenny Golladay. There's still a lot of other viable options. So as much as I like him, I'm still going to keep my exposure in check, I guess.
I will not. he had six targets last week. He is a ball hawk near the red zone. And I think that with Marshawn Lattimore likely seeing Mike Evans, that's a matchup Mike Evans can win, as we saw in week one. But that's still going to funnel at least a couple of extra targets away from him. So I think Humphreys is in play. Brate actually gets an upgrade too. We talked about this on Monday. He gets an upgrade with DeSean Jackson being out because he gets more work down the field, and he is $5,100. So I think it's actually an upgrade for everyone, not just Chris Godwin. But Godwin would be my favorite cash game play of this group, assuming that DeSean Jackson does sit again. Dolphins cornerback Xavien Howard has a knee injury and is considered week to week, which opens things up for the Patriots offense. We'll talk more about them in the trends discussion. Howard looks like he will miss that game, though, which is big for Brady and Josh Gordon and the other Patriots. Before we take a look at the trends for week 14, though, gotta let you know about the free play URL for week 14. In the week 13 Number Fire Podcast Network free roll, EJ Bel Air got the win by going superstars in Scrubsy. They had Patrick Mahomes, Christian McCaffrey, and Todd Gurley, and then saved some salary with Chris Conley, Dante Moncrief, and the Patriots defense. For that, they get Chris Conley, Brandon. Number Fire
save salary and get a star.
I mean, obviously. Stars and Scrubs and Chris Conley. That's the way it goes. For that, they get 3 free months of Number Fire Premium and a boatload of free FanDuel points to be used on entries. If you want to win one in on the Week 14 contest, here is your URL. So listen up. If you want to play in the free roll, the URL, FanDuel.com/league/JJ. FanDuel.com/league/JJ, as in JJ Zacharyson, our colleague here at Number Fire, the host of the Late Round Podcast. FanDuel.com/league/JJ for a chance at Number Fire Premium and free FanDuel points to be used on entries. Let's move now to our trends discussion for week number 14. Brandon, let's start things off with a passing offense that I dig quite a bit for this week. That is the New England Patriots. They are down in Miami. It is a second-time divisional game, and got to keep track of some weather for this game too. But assuming that the wind speeds do go down, I think the Patriots are in a pretty good spot. So, Brandon, what do you see with them here, especially recently in their passing efficiency?
Yeah, I mean, for all the issues that the offense has, you know, sort of had this season, they're fifth in adjusted passing net expected points per play, according to Number Fire's metrics, which adjusts for opponents and shows how many points over expectation they add on a per drop back basis. And, you know, it's not just Number Fire who sees them as an efficient passing offense. They're sixth in Football Outsiders passing DVOA. Now, despite that, Tom Brady has averaged just 18.2 FanDuel points per game. He's had more than 16 FanDuel points just once over his past five, when he scored 19.3 2 weeks ago against the Jets. So the ceiling's been a bit capped here. But against passers with at least 75% of the snaps played, the Dolphins have let up 20.2 fantasy points per game and 17.7 passing fantasy points per game, because we know Tom Brady's not going to do much with his legs. And they are 28th in adjusted pass defense by Number Fire's metrics. And they are fifth in deep ball success rate allowed, so keep that in mind. But part of that is because Xavien Howard can sort of ball hawk, play some center field on those deep throws, as we saw last week. The primary issue for Tom Brady has not been then efficiency. It's just sort of the touchdown conversion. Part of that is because the Patriots are fifth in rushing rate in the red zone, which is actually pretty typical for the Patriots. We've seen that for a few years now. You know, Miami's 26th in a rush adjusted rush defense based on Number Fire's metrics. So, you know, the Patriots could just keep it on the ground in the red zone yet again. But I mean, we know that Tom Brady's been one of the, you know, top six adjusted passers this season, and he's only $7,600 this week. So I think that this is a week, again, if the wind allows us to buy in on Tom Brady and hope that the touchdowns follow for once. Rob Gronkowski is very, very cheap at $6,200. He has maxed out at 8 targets in a game this year, but he's played virtually every snap since returning. He has a solid 18.3% target share in his two games back with 7 and 4 targets. Miami is 31st in fantasy points per target allowed to tight ends. Julian Edelman is $6,900. He's got a 24% target share since his second game back from his suspension, 8.5 targets per game. You know, Xavien Howard, even if he plays, hasn't shadowed since week 9. He could match up with Josh Gordon, but if he's hobbled, then that's a matchup that Josh Gordon, I mean, frankly, Josh Gordon could win that matchup if Howard were healthy. But Jim, do you see yourself buying low on this passing offense against such a bad defense? Or does anything like the divisional road game, the market shares, something else scare you off?
No, it doesn't really scare me. I think the wind does scare me a bit, but, you know, assuming that goes down, because it's 17 miles per hour right now, it could always change. So I want to operate under the assumption this game is not affected by weather. And under that assumption, this is a really fun offense right now, because I tweeted about this after week 12, but that was the first game. It was with Gronk and Michelle back, but also they had their starters on the offensive line. All 5 week 1 starters played that game for the first time since week 6. So they are the healthiest they've been all year. Now that Rex Burkhead is back too. And in these past 2 games, Brady has had his 2 highest expected points outputs of the entire year. He had topped 3 or 10 expected points just 3 times earlier. He's now done it twice in a row, both times topping 15. Again, his 2 best marks of the entire year. And one of those people tweeted at me, they're like, hey, like, they played the Jets, who cares? But then he did it against the Vikings, and the Vikings defense has been awesome ever since Everett Griffin came back. So I like Brady a lot. He's 76, the cheapest he has been all year. Prior to this was 79 last week. His price went down. He's facing a bad defense. He's not going to carry ownership. So I like Brady a lot. I want a lot of Tom Brady if the wind goes down. The pass catchers, I'm not as into Josh Gordon whenever Rob Gronkowski plays. He would get an upgrade as Xavien Howard sits, which it seems likely to happen. But I still think I'd prefer Gronk and Edelman. I think if I had to rank them, I think that because Gronk is $200 cheaper than Eric Ebron, I like Ebron's floor and ceiling more. I think that Ebron also carry more ownership, though. So I think if I had to rank them for tournaments, I'd go Edelman 1, followed by Gronk, followed by Josh Gordon, in that order. What about for you?
Just given the position, I might prioritize Gronk over Edelman, but I like both about equally, all things considered. With you, where with Gronkowski back, with him not having to stay in and block as much anymore, you know, that does hurt Josh Gordon more than anybody else. But, you know, just keep in mind, though, with the wind, Tom Brady's average depth of target last week was 3.8 yards.
He had one deep target, yeah.
So, and, I mean, he can do things
correctly. Chris Allen did some research on individual quarterbacks, and I think his research said that Tom Brady was pretty much agnostic when it comes to wind. Chris Allen, FFWX on Twitter. Yeah, he works for 444 Football, and I believe he wrote that Brady was pretty wind agnostic. I'm trying to remember. I read this over the offseason, but I think
I haven't.
That was the case.
I haven't seen it, but I do trust Chris with all my weather research.
Correct. I would agree there. I would lower my thoughts on Brady regardless, because I think that it lowers the game appeal in general. But yeah, I think that Edelman and Gronk would be the two guys who would be least affected by that. That, again, would be another downgrade for Gronk. Yeah, I think that Edelman's actually pretty fun at $6,900, because I think that price range actually isn't bad. He's got Amari Cooper right there. Gordon is there too. Adam Humphries is 65. So I don't expect Edelman to carry much ownership, even though, like, he's had a pretty solid floor. He's had at least 12 points in every game except for two since he came back. He's had 14 points in every game except for three. So, like, he's had a good floor. The ceiling hasn't been there, but I think he's capable of having a ceiling game based on the receptions he gets and the yardage he gets. So I think I do like Edelman quite a bit, but I'm not going to talk you out of Gronk if you have him first.
Well, I mean, I do have Julian Edelman as one of my wide receiver loves for this week, so I'm very high on him. It's just more of a tight end is always a mess, and I'm high on Gronk enough where I would, you know, all things considered, put them fairly equally.
Yep, I can live with that for sure. I think that they are both in a tier above Gordon for me, but I think they are in the same tier. Let's move on here to the game that I am actually most interested to watch from a pure football perspective on Sunday. Maybe not from a DFS perspective, because it's kind of scary, but it's the Ravens facing the Chiefs, and it's a big matchup. The Chiefs trying to lock down that first round bye. They're facing the Ravens, who are trying to get a playoff spot in. We have to decide how we want to handle the Chiefs in this game, because the Chiefs are the league's best offense based on number fires defense and their number fires metrics, and they're facing the league's best defense. This will be the sixth game the Chiefs have played a top 10 defense based on number fires metrics. In those first five games, they're averaging 30 points per game as a team. That's pretty great, but it also is down from the 42 points per game they average against defenses outside the top 10. Pretty sure that means defense does matter, but we'll leave that there. This also be the first time the Ravens have faced a top 10, or the sixth time the Ravens have faced a top 10 defense or offense. Oh my gosh. This is the sixth time the Ravens have faced a top 10 offense. There we go. Those other five, they have averaged 22.6 points per game, with only the Panthers scoring more than 25 points. They did score 36 in that one, though. The other seven teams they have faced have averaged 14.4 points per game. One factor to consider here, though, is that this game is in Kansas City, and a lot of elite defenses play differently on the road than they do at home. When Baltimore is at home, they allow negative 0.03 net expected points per dropback to opposing passers. On the road, that actually does get worse. It's at negative 0.07 net expected points per dropback. However, both games where the Ravens have allowed more than 25 points have taken place on the road. The Bengals, way back, put up 34 against them in week two. That was before Jimmy Smith was back, and the Panthers scored 36 in week eight. Mahomes, basically the same passer no matter where he plays. He averages 0.42 net expected points per dropback on the road, 0.40 at home. So I think that, Brandon, it does to me seem like facing the Ravens is a downgrade for the Chiefs, but still a matchup where they can put up points. Again, they're averaging 30 per game against top 10 defenses. So, Brandon, I want to ask you, if you do go Chiefs, will it be with the studs, or are you looking to pay down on someone like Spencer Ware at $6,400?
One of the options in, when you're playing daily fantasy basketball, is to look at spreads and over-unders and see just how a particular matchup compares to a team's season-long points per game. Yeah. Because generally players are priced as they score, you know, their points per game. So in this instance, say the Chiefs, you know, do score 30. That's just not quite on par with where they're generally going to be priced. So that matters.
Which is absurd, by the way.
Yeah, it's crazy. But I still think that there's enough value for sure to pay up for Mahomes, for Tyreek Hill, for Travis Kelce, who I do love quite a bit, because the one place that the Ravens have been sort of vulnerable is the tight end. And I mean, Travis Kelce, we know, is
Jared freak. Cook popped him too. And like, Jared Cook is not Travis Kelce.
No, he is not. Although Jared Cook actually has some athleticism, which yeah. some head coaches didn't actually know before the season. So that's,
you know. Not his head coach, though, right?
Yeah, for sure, not.
Right.
So yeah, I mean, I think that there's a path to play Mahomes. You know, especially Travis Kelce. Now the Ravens are eighth in deep ball pass success rate. They're first in overall target success rate allowed to wide receivers. So I'm a bit down on Tyreek Hill, but Spencer Ware, I love the workload and. You know, I'm not above or below or however you want to phrase it, playing Chris Conley at 4,700. It would be pretty limited exposure, frankly, because if the points are down, that hurts Conley.
Right.
But he's been playing a lot of routes or running a lot of routes, playing a lot of snaps. So I think that, frankly, Mahomes, Ware, Hill, Conley, Kelce are all still viable this week despite the matchup.
I think Ware is my favorite, actually. I know he has the worst matchup of them because like nobody runs in the Ravens. Like they just don't do it. So I think this will be more of a pass happy attack here, but Ware does get work in the passing game. He had 5 targets against Cleveland in a game that Kareem Hunt played. Like he has a ceiling. He has a route to score points even against a really good defense. So I think Spencer Ware is probably still my favorite piece here at $6,400. And tentatively, I have him in my cash game lineup. Do you rate Ware highest of these pieces, or does the matchup push him lower for you?
I, you know, price considered, I might put him first. I really want to pay up for Travis Kelce.
Yeah.
So it's a bit difficult. There are the running backs this week are a little bit. And I kind of don't love too many of them. So that does point me toward Ware, but I do, I'm going to talk a lot about Jeffrey Wilson this week on the podcast. But yeah, I mean, I think Spencer Ware is probably underpriced even in this matchup. So I have no problems with Ware. What about Mahomes for you? And what about Tyreek Hill?
I like Mahomes a lot. Because I don't think people use him and he's really good. So I'll use Mahomes. He averages 300 yards per game against these top 10 defenses, so like he's still good. Hill, I like him when he's low-owned, and I assume he'll be low-owned this week, but I can't have a lot of exposure because he's super volatile. So I think he's a guy I would use when I use Mahomes, but he's not going to be a huge standalone play for me because you got OBJ, he is 8,000, Michael Thomas is 83. Julio's 84, DeAndre Hopkins is 86, and I love him. I love Devontae Adams. Like, I love all these high-priced receivers, so I can't go hard at Hill outside of stacks with Mahomes. Whereas with Kelce, I think I can go with him outside of stacks with Mahomes. So I think I'll have some Hill, but probably not a ton.
Yeah, I always – that's kind of how you always need to
to
use him because we did see Mahomes overthrow Tyreek Hill at least once last week that I saw. Any Chris Conley for you?
No, Watkins got in a limited practice on Wednesday, and I assume that when he's back, the target share for Conley will go down. I can see myself using Sammy Watkins, though, to be fully honest. If he gets into full practice by Friday, I'd be interested in it. So he's 6,000. It would be very limited, but I think I can do it. Let's move on to your second trend, Brandon. Talking about another game that I think is actually pretty fun. That's between Houston and Indy. It is a second time in a divisional matchup, but both these offenses very different than what they were the first time they faced each other, and neither defense really one we necessarily need to avoid. So, Brandon, your second trend is looking at the Houston Texans' pass-to-run ratio and what they've done basically ever since Deshaun Watson got hurt.
Yeah, so, you know, something happened in week six or around week six, whatever it was, whether it's Watson or potentially the Houston defense, that just sort of turned things around. Since week six, Houston is dead last in pass-to-run ratio. They're their most run-heavy team in football. In that span, Deshaun Watson's averaged 24.6 attempts per game. When the game has been within 6 points either way, their pass rate goes up one percentage point from 46% to 47%. Still ranking them fourth worst in sort of those neutral scripts. You know, it could very well be their defense, which is actually first in passing net expected points per dropback and second in passing success rate allowed since week six. They were 27th and 21st through week five, respectively. Either way, you know, it's hurt Deshaun Watson's ceiling quite a bit, as he has had just three games with more than 16 fantasy points out of those seven games. But when he has had a ceiling game, he scored 31 FanDuel points, 20.3, and 29.4. So I can certainly live with that. The Colts are 8th in adjusted rush defense, but 25th in adjusted pass defense based on number fires metrics. So the Texans may not be able to run the ball very efficiently. And Houston has been outside the top 20 in rushing success rate since this shift in philosophy. So maybe they'll just run it and be inefficient regardless, but it is something that could point to a few more attempts for Deshaun Watson. Also, both of these teams are top 8 in situation neutral pace, according to Football Outsiders. Indy is 2nd. Houston is 8th. So what we know is that Indy can give up some passing production. They're not a good pass defense. Deshaun Watson at 7,800. Can still have a ceiling. It hasn't been there often, but he's still capable of scoring, you know, around 30 FanDuel points. Both teams are fast. They'll be playing in a controlled environment in Houston. As for DeAndre Hopkins, who you mentioned you love, I always love DeAndre Hopkins. You know, he's kind of had three down games in a row, you know, with 12.1, 9.9, and 12.6 FanDuel points, but he has 32% of the targets on the year, 9.6 per game, as well as 43% of the deep targets, and Indy is dead last in defending the deep ball based on success rate allowed on deep passes. So, Jim, is this a week that we can buy in on a Houston Texans sort of shootout, or are you still pumping the brakes with this pass volume?
Yeah, I think if you look at these two teams, they've both been a little bit slower recently, but like it makes sense because they've both been winning games. I mean, the Texans are on a 9-game winning streak, and they've gotten out in front in a lot of those games and been able to just run the football. But like Andrew Luck is indoors. T.Y. Hilton is indoors. I don't think this is a game where Houston gets out front and just, you know, puts on the brakes. So I like this game a lot for game stacks, and I like both sides of it. I think if we're looking at the high price receivers, DeAndre Hopkins, my favorite, above $8,000. I think he's my favorite. It's between him and Devontae Adams, honestly, but I think I would give Hopkins the nudge there because this game matters for them, and I think that that is valuable. So I'm going to stack this game up quite a bit. I think I like Andrew Luck more than Deshaun Watson, though, just because the script sets up more for more pass attempts for the Colts, given that they're on the road, and Luck is not really someone who, you know, gets hit in negative game scripts. So I think I go Luck over Mahomes by a hair. What about for you between those two guys if you had to choose just one? I meant Watson.
Yeah.
That's weird.
You did say Mahomes, but I know what you meant. I think the listeners knew what you meant. But yeah, I want to play Deshaun Watson. I always want to play him. I always want to stack him with DeAndre Hopkins. But, I mean, straight up, I guess I would prefer Andrew Luck, but it's close enough, and I'm going to have exposure to both of them. I think they stack well in this game. They're not overpriced. They're both below 8,000. They both have some pretty clear stacking partners. So whether it's DeAndre Hopkins or T.Y. Hilton or Eric Ebron for Luck. So, you know, they both have some rushing potential. Mm-hmm. This game could either be, you know, 10-7, or it could be like 40 to 30, 37. And I think it's worth some game stacks in bigger tournaments.
Favorite game stack from this game, go.
It's going to be Watson for the lower ownership, Hopkins, and then probably Hilton as a pivot away from Eric Ebron.
I'm the same except flipped to Luck over, because I think there's enough value elsewhere where I can afford to pay for two high price receivers. So I'm comfortable doing so. But I think I just prefer Luck a little bit more. So I think that game probably will be very popular for me. Let's move on to my second trend here and talk about the Steelers, because they don't have James Conner this weekend. That could open up some value with Jalen Samuels and Stephen Ridley, but it may honestly be a spot where we just target the passing game here. According to the Quant Edges injury tool, the Steelers have thrown 65% of the time this year with James Conner on the field, but that has gone up to 70% when he has been off. And now they're facing the league's 32nd ranked pass defense here. It makes sense to continue with that plan of attack. But we also know that Ben Roethlisberger struggles when he's on the road, and this game is in Oakland. So should we be concerned about using him or other pieces in the passing game? So let's take a look at Roethlisberger here. In games at home this year, he has 0.28 net expected points per dropback. On the road, that falls to 0.11, which is roughly the league average. But a lot of those games have come against top-end pass defenses. Of the Steelers' six road games, four of them have come against defenses ranked in the top five against the pass based on number fires metrics. In the two games against lesser defenses, Ben topped 350 passing yards both times. That has allowed him to average 21.2 FanDuel points per game on the road this year, which will work even at a salary of $8,600. Ben has also averaged 45.8 pass attempts per game on the road, so I'm in on Antonio Brown, Juju Smith-Schuster, Vance McDonald, and I think if I'm going at the backs, I prefer Jalen Samuels, who is the better guy to use when they're throwing a lot. So, Brandon, I like the Steelers a lot. Where do you sit on these guys, and will you take stabs at Stephen Ridley at minimum price?
I don't know if I'm going to play any Stephen Ridley.
So Stephen Ridley isn't going to get targets. And we talked about last week how valuable targets are for a ceiling for running backs. He'll probably score a touchdown. Like, that's probably going to happen. But, like, what's his ceiling? 12 points?
I mean, that works at 4,500 if he gets there. But
if that's your ceiling, I'd rather just go Samuels.
Yeah, I mean, I would as well. Yeah. But I love Ben. I have no problems with the road splits. I actually noticed the same thing, that he's faced four top five pass defenses on the road, but two outside the top 20, I believe. And he, you know, as you mentioned, came through in those spots. Oakland is 26th in deep ball defense. They're 25th in fantasy points per target allowed out of the slot. They're 24th in fantasy points per target allowed to wide receivers, 32nd against tight ends. So I think that Antonio Brown, even with his not super high market share, mm-hmm. is certainly in play at 8,800. I know it's not like a hot take, but I'm even in on Juju Smith-Schuster. I tend to shy away from him whenever they're heavily favored, but it could be just a very pass-heavy game, like you mentioned, right. With those splits. And I'm also sort of into Vance McDonald at 5,500. So I think that I'm going to have a lot of Ben Roethlisberger, and I would even consider like an Antonio Brown, Juju Smith, Ben stack, because they could just soak up, you know, all of the touchdowns here.
Right. Like in the games where they throw a lot, they really do narrow their target tree. I think it's more so when they don't throw a lot that things get a little bit dicey there. Juju had 19 targets in week two. Antonio Brown had 17. They both had 10 targets in week four. They both had 10 targets in week 11, week 12, and Juju had 9 in week 13. So almost did again there. Like, these guys are just going to get a lot of targets. And I know the market shares are lower, but when they throw as much as they do, it kind of doesn't matter. Juju gets a lot of high leverage looks. So I agree with you that Juju might be my favorite here at 75. Vance is very interesting because Ryan Switzer got a concussion last week, and I don't believe he practiced Wednesday, so there's a chance he misses. And what that does is opens up additional targets in the middle of the field, which is where Vance roams. So he's fun at 55. I think I'll have, like, some Samuels, enough Samuels. Like, I think of the super cheap backs, It's between him and Justin Jackson for me for my favorite, but I think I might lean SAMU. I don't know.
This just makes me like afraid because we could be sitting here, you know, saying, oh, you know, Jalen Samuels and Justin Jackson they open up everything and then they get scripted out or they play 45% of the snaps or something. And then we're just frustrated. And I mean, I'm going to talk a lot about Jeffrey Wilson and that could happen to him too, but we've at least seen it from him.
Right. I think the way you counteract that is by not using them in cash games and not going too hard at them. Like you use them enough to where if they go off, you benefit, but you don't overexpose yourself. Make sure you're very conscious of your exposure levels.
Yeah, I'm not trying to use any of the backs.
Agreed.
Like below 6,000 in cash games, basically.
Agreed. I 100% agree with that, and I will be doing the same.
Okay, as long as we're on the same page.
Yeah, no. I think I can't trust anything in the cash. But tournaments, sure. I'll take stabs and see what happens. Let's move on to your third trend, Brandon, an unfortunate one, because we got to talk about Emmanuel Sanders here and his injury and what it does to the Broncos. Could be a lot of value on this team, an unfortunate reason here. But what do you see with this Broncos offense with Manny out of the fold?
Yeah, I mean, Sanders tore his Achilles entering week 14. And, you know, he's not super old or anything, but this could linger into
he's old enough
next season. Yeah, it's just an unfortunate situation. But, of course,
he's really fun, too, which makes it worse.
Yeah, he's like one of my favorite players, and I don't, they also, of course, traded away Demaryius Thomas, so it's a very different offense than it was even, you know, 5 weeks ago now. Sanders had accounted for 28.4% of the targets, about 7.8 per game, about 40% of the air yards for Denver since the Demaryius Thomas trade. He also had half of the, albeit few, red zone looks and 36% of the deep targets. So heavy usage for Sanders, but also high leverage usage that is now gone. The Broncos, you know, have a few viable options offensively to sort of replace that production, or at least the volume, maybe not the production, but that of course starts with Courtland Sutton, who has had a 20.2% target share without Demaryius Thomas, 5.5 targets per game for him. He's running about 90% of the routes in all four of those games. He costs us just 5,600 against the league's 19th ranked deep ball defense and 26th ranked adjusted pass defense. Overall, he hadn't really come through for most of that duration until last week when he played some, you know, tougher opponents, but also tough deep ball defenses. Now he could face some extra Richard Sherman, but Sherman doesn't shadow. He plays almost exclusively on the left side of the defense, so like the quarterback's right side, where Sutton lines up only about a quarter of the time. So I can sort of jive with that. I don't particularly think that it's a situation that we need to overthink it and not play Courtland Sutton at 5,600. The most likely replacement for Sanders in the slot is Deshaun Hamilton, who's played about 43% of his, you know, 94 snaps from the slot already. He ran 17 of 24 pass routes last week, but didn't have a target. Six of those were from the slot. He played about 80% of the snaps overall, which is actually a wide receiver high for Denver. He is minimum salary, so I can get on board with Deshaun Hamilton. Matt Lacoste didn't come through last week when I had a few darts with him. He's 4,500. He played 80% of the snaps last week as well. Ran half the routes. He can work from the slot. He could be a beneficiary here as well. It's worth noting at least that Devontae Booker ran 46% of the routes last week if we're looking into the backfield. But I mean, if we are looking into this backfield, we have to look at Philip Lindsay at 7,900. Whose workload has been pretty great overall, and it's possible that they just lean on him more. Both of these teams here are top 11 in situation neutral pace, according to the full season, but Pat Thorman of Pro Football Focus noted in his weekly snaps, pace, and stats column that they're actually both top 11 in combined snaps per game over the past 4 weeks. So the pace could be high, maybe not. Maybe Denver tries to slow things down without Manny Sanders out there, but, you know, I think I'm going to have a lot of exposure to the Denver offense, and that allows me to spend up pretty much everywhere else because of the prices. Jim, can you dumpster dive into this offense, or will you be sticking only with Lindsay if you target the Broncos?
So what I look at a lot of times when a good receiver goes down is I try to look at the quarterback's efficiency when throwing to him relative to other guys. And Keenum this year has averaged 0.37 net expected points per target when throwing it at Sanders. That is highest in the team for anybody who has more than seven targets. Cortland Sutton is at 0.21. Like, everyone else is lower. I think that's a significant downgrade for Case Keenum, so I'm probably not going to use him. And if Keenum gets downgraded, that means they're less likely to move the football effectively, which also lowers me on Philip Lindsay, who I had concerns about from a workload perspective anyway, because he played like 44% of the snaps last week and got just one target. So I think I'm out on Keenum, out on Lindsay, but I will take Cortland Sutton and Deshaun Hamilton. It's actually a good Penn State week, Brandon, because Chris Godwin and Deshaun Hamilton, both very viable. So I think you just want Penn State guys. Yeah. Yeah, let's do that. Let's do it.
I don't know if I know any other Penn State guys.
Mike Gesicki.
Yeah, you know,
he's not in play. Please don't take that seriously. I think I like those two guys, but they're probably the only two I'll use in this offense.
I can see that. I'm not above, punting with Matt Lacoste either.
True. Sorry. Yeah, I'll have some Lacoste for sure. That makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that they just open up a lot. I don't think that you have to go super hard at them. I think that there could be some enough play volume. I'm not worried about the matchup necessarily. So I think that there are paths to just rostering some Broncos and spending down maybe on Deshaun Hamilton rather than Jalen Samuels, and then you can spend up at running back instead.
Yeah, I think that would be a route that I'd be very okay taking, and I will probably do that. So Deshaun Hamilton and Cortland Sutton, both cash game considerations for me, at least, is the way I'd phrase it. But tournament plays as well. Let's move on here to talk about the high-priced running backs, because, Brandon, we've got Christian McCaffrey, we got Saquon Barkley, Alvin Kamara is in a interesting game and a lower price, Aaron Jones. They're all very interesting. Got some value plays, too. But I think I might wind up having Ezekiel Elliott at the top of my rankings for both cash games and tournaments here, as he is at home against the Eagles. And we'll talk about Zeke's workload here. Not a great matchup against the Eagles. They are 11th in success rate allowed to opposing backs. And that's with Timmy Jernigan missing the first 10 games of the year. He did miss practice Wednesday, but he is an upgrade for that rush defense. But I think that Zeke has everything else that we need. If we look since the Amari Cooper trade, Zeke is averaging 21.6 carries and 6.4 targets per game. The offense is moving the ball, and the defense is playing well, allowing them to give him just massive volume. Over the past 3 weeks, Zeke is averaging 37.3 adjusted opportunities per game, which again is carries plus 2x his targets, in order to account for the value of a target relative to a carry for a back and half PPR scoring. So carries plus 2x targets. Zeke is at 37.3. Nobody else has more than Christian McCaffrey at 32.7, followed by Saquon Barkley at 31.3. Then you dip down to everyone else at 28 or lower. So it's Zeke, massive gap. Saquon and McCaffrey, another massive gap. This is also a really great situation for Zeke. The Cowboys are at home as 3.5-point favorites. They're also coming off of a Thursday game, and the Eagles just played on Monday. Zeke is $8,800, but everything to me indicates he is fully worth that salary. He is probably the first guy I'll lock in for cash games, and he is setting up as a great play for tournaments too. So, Brandon, looking at these high price backs, where does Zeke sit for you relative to Kamara, Barkley, and McCaffrey?
Probably just second behind McCaffrey, if not just sort of first. They're probably 1A, 1B. there's no Todd Gurley on this slate. There's no Melvin Gordon. There's no James Conner. I kind of have three backs that I'm really eyeing up, and that's McCaffrey, Barkley, and Elliott. I would rank Barkley third, I guess, is probably just the best way to put it. He's third for me. So McCaffrey and Zeke are just sort of the 1A, 1B. I think Kamara is going to go too overlooked for my liking, but then you drop down and other than like Aaron Jones, whose snap rate plummeted last week, like there really isn't a workhorse back necessarily outside of, you can't even consider that to be David Johnson or Joe Mixon at this point. So
right.
All three I think you need to force in as much as possible because their workload relative to the other backs is just so immense.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that you could very much make the case for McCaffrey over Zeke. And I think that based on the way this slate is shaping up, there is enough value at receiver where I can afford both without dumpster diving at quarterback. And I like that. So I'm probably going to have both in cash games. I would like to get Barkley, but I don't think I can get all three in cash. So I'll probably just have those two.
You can do it.
I can get there in tournaments, I know.
You can do it.
In cash?
Yeah.
Okay. I'll take your word for it. I'll try to dink around with that later on. But I think it's another week where even though we have value at running back, I still want at least two high-priced running backs in my cash game lineup. Would you agree with that, regardless of who it may be?
Oh, yeah. It's absolutely McCaffrey and Elliott. But if, you know, if you're feeling Barkley because you're a Penn State guy, you know, that's the trend this week.
I'm going to have that. That's for fun. That sounds fun to me. And I'm all for weird narratives that don't actually have any narrative behind them.
Yeah, but all three are very much in play. I think you can nitpick and put Barkley third. But McCaffrey and Elliott are, I think, just easily the two best plays of the week.
All righty, so let's move on here to the fourth trend, Brandon, to discuss one of the lower price backs. That's Jeffrey Wilson Jr., who I'm sure you had heard of before he was signed from the practice squad a couple weeks ago. It was weird because he played a bunch of snaps in that first game. And then last week, he played a whole bunch. Your fourth trend is looking at his workload and seeing if we can trust him at $5,600 for this week.
Yeah, he's this year's VLOOKUP ruiner for sure. Jeffrey Wilson
Jr. of NFL.
Jeffrey Wilson, Jeff Wilson Jr. Maybe Bubba sometimes
Wallace. He's up there too.
Yeah, but I mean it must be week 14 because we're talking about an undrafted rookie running back from North Texas who's quarterbacked by an undrafted quarterback Southern Miss. So it's either week 14 or the preseason.
Directional schools for the win, man.
Yeah, but there's a value opportunity here. I think running back with Wilson. You know, contrasted with the other expensive backs that we just discussed, it's very hard to make the case to spend down at running back sometimes when there just isn't a guaranteed workload. And with, you know, running backs getting 4 yards per carry or whatever, that volume adds up. So it's very much viable to spend up at running back. But I think Wilson has shown enough already to consider him at 5,600. He obviously gets a boost because Matt Breida has been ruled out already. And this really isn't a situation where we're just hoping to sort of figure out which back gets work. Like we might be with the Steelers or possibly even the Chargers, given the you know, news around Eckler maybe being worn out and Justin Jackson looking great. We're kind of guessing there as much as we want to believe in either Jalen Samuels or Justin Jackson or whomever it is. We don't really have that with Wilson because he played 39.1% of the snaps in week 12. He had 7 carries and a target there. And then he played 72.4% of the snaps in week 13. He had 15 carries and 9 targets, so 24 opportunities or 33 adjusted opportunities. If we double the value of the targets like Jim taught us to do, according to Pro Football Focus as well, he ran 2 of his 25 snaps as a receiver in week 12 and then 5 of 49 in week 13. And he also ran 44% of the routes in week 12, 64% of the routes in week 13. So they've been using him in different ways. He's not just getting the ball handed to him 20 times and, you know, kind of like a Gus Edwards situation. Additionally, Nick Mullins has been pretty solid, or at least above average, with 0.16 passing net expected points per drop back. League average there is 0.12. He's got 8.13 yards per attempt. League average there is about 7.5. The success rate's a little bit below average at 48%, but you know, he can still move the ball occasionally. And the Broncos are now without Chris Harris in the slot, who is Pro Football Focus's 5th best cornerback by their grading. He has played all but 85 snaps, about 8%. So it's really hard to look into the splits with and without him this year. Additionally, most of that came last week against Jeff Driscoll, so I don't want to read into the splits without Chris Harris. Tremaine Brock, though, missed last week, as did Shaquille Barrett. So they're kind of a beatable defense with these injuries. And, you know, overall, they're 19th in success rate allowed to quarterbacks, which is, you know, enough for me to believe in Nick Mullins a little bit. And they're 23rd in rushing success rate allowed to backs. So I think with Wilson at 56, he's a more viable option than any of the other low price running backs this week, other than potentially Spencer Ware. Mm-hmm. So, you know, where does Wilson stack up for you this week among the rest of the backs?
Well, I think you said it earlier. You said we've seen it from him, and we haven't seen it from anyone else. So I think if you're ranking the guys below $6,000, it has to be Wilson at the top. And I like what you talk about the usage too, because those nine targets are so valuable. And we talked before about how Emmanuel Sanders being out hurts Philip Lindsay and Case Keenum. But in a weird way, it also benefits Jeffrey Wilson Jr. because it means that the 49ers are more likely to be able to run the ball later in the game. So, like, that's weird that that has that, but that's how NFL works. So I think that I don't want to use Wilson in cash because I don't trust this offense enough to go there in cash games. But for tournaments, sure. I think that he is my favorite in this low price range, and I will be comfortable using him. So I'm going to go there, I think, for sure. I think that he's actually a pretty solid play. And, like, the more I use of him, it means the less I have to guess elsewhere. And I think that's pretty valuable.
Yeah, if you're spending down at running back in cash games, I think you need to find the extra, what, 800, I guess it would be, to get to Spencer Ware, because his offense is probably going to double up the 49ers, even again, in a, you know, in a tough matchup.
Mahomes and Mullins is pretty close.
Yeah, but like if you're going to spend down, which again, I mostly advise against, but I think Spencer Ware is worth it. But Wilson is at least a borderline. I would consider him as a flex if I really don't want to, you know, play the Aaron Jones guessing game in case what we saw last week is more than just a 1 week thing. But I think he's great for tournaments with that usage, especially the receiving work. And especially with Chris Harris out, again, he can't really figure out the splits, but it's certainly not going to help losing someone as good as Chris Harris.
Exactly. And that does benefit Wilson, too, because, again, they'll move the ball better. Also, I built an all-Big Ten lineup. I decided to expand beyond Penn State. You got Tom Brady, Saquon, Zeke, Chris Godwin, Deshaun Hamilton, Michael Thomas, George Kittle, and Justin Jackson. So, actually, it should be Packers defense, because I think they have, like, five Northwestern dudes. They have four. Three. Ebron Campbell, Tyler Lancaster, and Dean Lowry. So maybe I'll just go Packers instead. Okay, we're on Packers defense over Giants.
Got a nice Dean Lowry reference. I hope he pops up on FanShare.
What? Dean Lowry's the best. He's actually a starter. The other guys I don't think start. I don't think Lancaster or Ibrahim start.
No, it's just, you know, maybe we'll go through the podcast and have to tag Dean Lowry if we say his name enough.
He could be tight end eligible, I think. He's a good You know, why not? Probably better than Jimmy Graham. So let's move on to the fourth trend here, Brandon. Talk about Carolina's pass defense, because they're on the road this week and it's a must-win game for them. But I think it's actually a good spot for Baker Mayfield. Mayfield was awful last week. He threw three picks. He lost 5.08 expected points to the passer, which was his second worst performance of the year. But now he's back at home for a plus matchup again. The Browns are hosting the Panthers, who don't jump out as being a terrible pass defense, but they really have been this year. They enter week 14 ranked 27th against the pass based on number fires metrics, and that has allowed them to allow big production even when the volume hasn't been there. Russell Wilson had 339 yards in just 31 attempts. Big Ben had 328 yards and five tutties on just 25 attempts. Carson Wentz, Eli Manning, Andy Dalton. That's a weird list. Eli Manning had more than 300 yards against them. And Odell Beckham had like 50 yards in that game. Baker's big games this year have come against the Falcons and Bengals, and they're bad defense. They're ranked 30th and 23rd against the pass, respectively, but the Panthers are in that same realm. This game also has the added bonus of not being a divisional rematch, and there are a bunch of those for this week. So I think that Baker is very much back in play at $7,500, and the stinker last week should keep people away. And we can talk about the stacking options, but Brandon, first, are you into Baker in this matchup?
Yeah, Jim.
Yeah.
Come on, Jim. I'm not like the Baker Mayfield guy out of the two of us, but I'll play him when the matchup's there. And this week, the matchup is there. It was not there last week. Mm-hmm. It was there, I think, the week before, and I didn't really play enough of him, even though I talked about him on the podcast. But yeah, I mean, he comes through in good matchups. Carolina doesn't really generate a lot of pressure. Mm-hmm. I don't really think that there's any reason to be worried about Mayfield. If anything, I guess it's that Cam Newton's more hurt than we can realize, and he struggles to move the ball, and then they just run it with Nick Chubb. But I think Baker is a great play at 7,500.
Yeah, that's the best thing you can be in NFL DFS as a quarterback is predictable. Like Eli Manning's predictable because he'll never score points, but Baker's predictable because he will come through.
Except against the Panthers, I guess.
Yeah, apparently. Hey, there we go. It's perfect. But I think that's great for Baker. The problem is I don't know who to stack him with. Looking at the market share since Freddie Kitchens took over, Jarvis Landry's at 21%, and nobody else is above 14%, except for Duke Johnson, I guess, but I'm not considering him. So I think if I'm stacking Baker, I might just go back to what we talked about a couple weeks ago and stack him with Nick Chubb. He's $7,700, and you're most likely getting exposure to every touchdown that the Browns score that way. You're not worrying about the spread out target shares. Chubb came through last week for fantasy, even in a really tough matchup, at least 30 receiving yards in three straight. So I kind of think when stacking Baker, Chubb may be my favorite. Jarvis is actually priced down enough where I'm okay with him. Same thing for David Njoku and Antonio Callaway. I'm not going to avoid them, but I think Chubb may be my favorite. What about for you?
Yeah, it's always hard to roster a quarterback when you just don't know who to stack him with. And that's just what we have here. I think that you can make the case for Njoku. You can make the case for Jarvis. You can make the case for Antonio Callaway, who gets a lot of end zone targets, just kind of a lot of like almost production, which is really hard to quantify. But, I mean, he's still involved. He's running solid enough routes of late. Jarvis, he's about on par with Jarvis almost. I can see the case for Njoku for sure. I guess maybe you sort of rotate in some of those guys if you really want to. But yeah, I think that the Nick Chubb, Baker Mayfield stack is in play this week.
Absolutely. I think that I think that's probably gonna be my favorite one. Chubb is 77. Like
Carolina's a good rush defense, but yeah. I don't really care about rushing like matchup that much. And we have also seen him get some targets of late. So
agreed. And he's been effective in the passing game too, which means he should continue to get targets. So I think that that's a pretty fun spot for him. Before I take a look at bookmaker info for week 14, gotta let you know that FanDuel have just added a brand new, never before seen slate to their NFL offerings. Second half only. That is right. It's half the game, but all of the fantasy. Is your team not doing so hot at halftime? Or maybe you know you've got a big win in the bag and just want to double down on your lineup? Well, now you can draft a brand new team for just the second half of a single NFL game. To find one of the available half slates, just select the single game NFL game style. Look through the slate options. It is just one more way to win on FanDuel. I would assume if you listen to this Thursday, they will have second half contests for Jacksonville and Tennessee. So if you want to dabble in the action, make sure you do so there. Let's move on down to the bookmaker info for week 14, starting off with the Chargers here. We always have to be cautious about games with massive point spread, but the Chargers running back situation gives us a lot of reason to look at their 14-point spread in favor of them over the Bengals. The 48-point over-under gives the Chargers a 31-point implied team total, and Austin Eckler costs 67, while Justin Jackson is min price at $4,500. The Bengals are 29th in adjusted rush defense based on number of fires metrics, and they've been putrid since their bye week. So, Brandon, we don't know what it's going to look like here in this backfield. Can you buy into either back or... And do you like anyone else in this game as a result of the spread?
No cash games for either of them.
Agreed.
Again, if I'm just going to guess, I guess I'll just go with Jackson because he's so much cheaper. I might not have any Austin Eckler, and that could really bite me because we know that he can get peppered out of the backfield. So even if he doesn't get any carries, he could still push for like 10 targets. The problem is they might not need to throw it. But I secretly still like Phillip Rivers as like a high floor play because he's just been so good. Keenan Allen's floor has been crazy and they could build a lead through the passing game. It's one thing that we, or at least I tend to overlook, is if there's a heavy spread, sometimes that means that the passing game got them the lead, and that could very much be the case. And it's really just the Keenan Allen show here. So I think that Keenan Allen could be sneaky. Maybe he's not, but I think that Keenan Allen is in play even with that spread.
I think I will be avoiding the passing offense. I agree with what you're saying in general, but I think given that there are other games that I like, I'm probably okay avoiding them. But with Eckler and Jackson, I think it's one of those assumption situations where if you assume that Eckler kind of plays the same role he had last week, where he had 13 carries and 8 targets, like, that's awesome for his price. So if I assume he gets that same workload again, he's a baller at 67. So tournaments, I'll make that assumption lineup, but I'll also make the assumption that they pedal him back and use Jackson again, because head coach Anthony Lynn said that, like, Eckler's burned out. He plays a lot of special teams, and they might need to use Jackson more. So Jackson at 45, if we assume he gets more work, he's not going to average, like, 8 yards per carry again, but he had 44 receptions his senior year in college. He is kind of like Philip Lindsay in a lot of ways, had a lot of passing game work in college. He's very shifty, very small, but very fast. So, like, I'll have both. I think if I had to choose, and I agree with your analysis there, where you just take the savings of Jackson and use him, so I'm probably going to have more Jackson, but I do want to make sure I consciously get Austin Eckler in there at 67, because if he gets his same workload again, like, he's amazing for the passing game work he gets.
Yeah, I mean, anytime you can, you know, you have a running back who gets as many snaps and touches as Melvin Gordon, anytime you can take his backup and run him out on special teams until he's just exhausted in case you ever actually need him, you should probably do that thing.
Who would ever question the Chargers' usage of players, though, Brandon? Come on. It's not like they put Melvin Gordon out there while hurt and ran him on a jet sweep. Who would do that?
Yeah, I don't know what they're doing.
Rest in peace, Melvin. Please get healthy soon. The highest total on the main slate is down in Tampa Bay for the Bucs and the Saints. That one's currently at 56 points, and no other game is above 53. However, there are a couple of red flags here. This is the second matchup against divisional teams. The Saints are playing outdoors, and the past 4 games in Tampa Bay have all hit the under. So, Brandon, are you worried about this game at all? And if not, which game stacks are you digging most?
I'm a little bit worried, but not enough to avoid it. I still like Drew Brees a lot. I think he's probably going to be under-owned given the matchup. He's actually been pretty solid on the road, especially against weak opponents. I know it's a divisional game, and he hasn't really been that good in Tampa, but I don't particularly care that much. It's not like I'll have a lot of Drew Brees anyway, but I love Alvin Kamara here, and I love Michael Thomas. I think that he's going to go overlooked just because of the dud last week, and people kind of just sort of overlook. They look at, like, 1 week, and they let that dictate a lot of their decisions. So I think that we haven't seen it from the Saints for long enough that these guys are all going to be underowned.
I agree with that for sure. Kamara is $8,300. And, like, yeah, like, he's been down, but, like, his floor has still been rock solid ever since their bye week with Ingram getting more work. He still had 10 points in every game. He had 31 in one of those. He had 24 on the road against Cincinnati, a game where they blew out the Bengals, and he got 11 targets last week, and that workload is good to me. So with his price down, with his ownership down, I can buy back in on Kamara. With Michael Thomas, he's gotten, I think, 28% of the deep targets since Ted Ginn got hurt. He did not practice on Wednesday, and given that they played last Thursday, that is a minor concern to me, but I still think that he could erupt in this spot. So I like both of them. I think I'd rank Thomas higher by a hair just because Kamara's priced close enough to backs, so I think have much better ceilings and floors than he does. But I think it's close. I have Thomas over Kamara by a hair. What about for you?
Yeah, but then you put Thomas against all those other wide receivers this week. I love the receivers. It's very hard to pick, but just try to get some exposure to both, I guess.
Favorite Buck?
I mean, I guess Chris Godwin, but he's everybody. So, yeah. And Adam Humphries is priced up a bit too much for my liking. 65.
Yeah. That's really pretty good floor, but he hasn't had the true ceiling, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, if one of the wide receivers here goes for like $150, it's not going to be Adam Humphries. It's going to be Godwin or Mike Evans.
Right. I mentioned on this Monday's podcast and earlier again, but I think that Cam Bray does get a bump up with DeSean Jackson out. He actually had 36 yards last week, Brandon. That is the most he has had all year.
In his career.
Probably. But that is a bump up for him. He's 51. Like, I'd rank him behind all the receivers, but he's at least viable, I think, given how bad tight end is. So I will keep that in mind. Another divisional matchup has the Eagles facing the Cowboys in a controlled environment in Dallas. Love that. Total open at 43.5 points and has not budged despite a heavy majority of the bets coming in on the over. Dallas always has some unique betting trends because they're a very public team, but it still implies that this will be a bit of a low-scoring affair. Dallas won in Philadelphia back in Week 10, 27-20, but that game was 13-13 entering the fourth quarter. So, Brandon, are you worried at all about assets in this game with like Dak Prescott, Amari Cooper, Zach Ertz, or are you still in here?
I think I'm still in. Of course, I love Zeke, but this team has been concentrating their usage enough for me, and that's really what matters. The big over-unders, the big, you know, like the heavy pace, the high pace, that impacts more of like the tertiary and quaternary options. But here it's sort of like it's Dak Prescott. I'm not super high on Carson Wentz, but you know, we know Amari Cooper's going to get the ball. We know Zach Ertz is going to get the ball. He went berserk. He had 16 targets, I think 145 yards, two touchdowns against Dallas in that game. So we know where the ball's going, and that sort of thwarts the low point total here for me.
Do you like anybody on Philadelphia outside of Ertz? Like, are you in on Golden Tate or anyone?
I like Tate more than Alshon Jeffrey.
Although, I agree, because Alshon's market share has been terrible, and Byron Jones is legit good.
Yeah, I think that there's going to be a buy low opportunity for Jeffrey because he's still running routes. He's just not getting targeted.
I don't think it'll happen until he faces a weaker outside corner than Byron.
Right. So it's not this week for me.
Agreed.
I guess Michael Gallup at 5,100, if we're going to spend down at wide receiver, he's been getting a lot of deep looks. Mm-hmm. He could be worth it against such a depleted secondary, but he's not going to be a primary target for me at 50, even at 5,100. But I'm not above Michael Gallup. I don't think I'll full on stack this game, but I think there are ways to get exposure to it. And I'm certainly not off of Zeke or Amari Cooper or Zach Ertz if I have the salary to get to him.
I think I will have some game stacks this game because there's something on the line, both teams trying to make the playoffs. So I will have some game stacks, just not a ton. And I like Cooper. And I like Gallup, so I'll be using some of it for sure. Speaking of having something on the line, we do have one game with a high total where there is nothing on the line. That's between the Packers and the Falcons up in Green Bay, but the total is 49.5. It actually opened at 48, according to Sports Insights, and is up to around 50, actually, in some books. The Packers are 6-point home favorites. They had the fifth highest implied total on the main slate, which is kind of weird given how bad they played, but they're good offense. Brandon, with Atlanta playing outdoors, the Packers in their first game under a new coach, can you stack this game? And what plays do you like on both sides?
Yeah, I think I can stack it. There might be some, I'm not the narrative. I'm not the narrative whisperer, but there could be something here. Aaron Rodgers could just decide to throw the ball like 60 times here if he wants. He might not do that. I mean, again, it's just sort of conjecture, but I think that with these assets here, it's Julio Jones is certainly in play. Devontae Adams has been elite. He's had 12.1 or more FanDuel points in every single game, at least 7 targets in every game. This is a very good matchup for him. Even with Aaron Jones and his snap rate being down, he's in play for me. Mm-hmm. I think that it's really, though, just Jones, Adams, and I guess Jones.
Other Jones.
Yeah, Julio, Aaron, and Devontae for me primarily. I don't really think I'm going to get too heavy because this game could be just sort of a bit too popular for my liking given the sort of fact that they don't really have anything to play for.
And there's name value in it too, which matters. Any Aaron Rodgers at 81?
Yeah, sure. If I'm going to stack it, he is just going to throw it to Devontae Adams primarily. I'm not chasing really the Jimmy Graham. What do you have, like 11 targets last week?
With a broken thumb.
Yeah, I'm not really going to go there. So,
yeah, I think for me it would be the same guys you mentioned plus Aaron Rodgers. I'm not going to use Matt Ryan because he's outdoors. I can't use the Falcons' secondary options because they're outdoors. They kind of are a team I only use indoors outside of Julio. So probably just the big Packers and Julio for me. Let's take a look at some weather here. We could see some gross weather down in Miami for the Patriots and Dolphins. Current wind speeds are projected at 17 miles per hour, and there is some rain in the forecast. Kind of similar in Tampa Bay for the Saints and Buccaneers. There, the wind speeds are projected at 14 miles per hour with a higher chance of rain. Brandon, let's assume these forecasts hold. How would it affect your outlook on those two games?
If they hold, I mean, I wouldn't I'm still fine-ish with Brady because he doesn't throw it deep. But I don't think
he'll carry any ownership this week.
I didn't want to say it, but he's got one fan share tag. I mean,
he had one yesterday in the league too, and I didn't know if that was going to stick or not. But it's probably going to.
Yeah,
I'm writing about him for Friday, so maybe we'll get maybe we'll double his tags here. But like, you know,
yeah, he's got one. Mark Sanchez has three. I guess the sentiment isn't positive for Mark Sanchez, but
yeah,
still more buzz on Sanchez than Brady. So
my goodness, I think it would lower me a bit on Buck Saints, but I'd still have some, and it would also lower me a bit on Patriots Dolphins, but I think I'll still be overweight on every Patriot pretty much, except for Sony Michel.
I'm not really going to go to the backfield. That was that wasn't fun last week.
No, and it won't be fun with Burkhead back. So I'll probably still be overweight on the Patriots, even though the wind is scary. But like, if they're not going to carry it, it won't take a lot to be overweight on them, is the way I'd phrase it. Let's speaking of quarterbacks, Brandon, let's move down to our loves for week number 14, starting at the signal callers. Who are you loving for week number 14?
I'm going to stick with Deshaun Watson. He has averaged 31.3 rushing yards per game on the full season. He's got 38, 7, 70, and 30 in the past three games. You know, as far as the passing goes, he's gotten just two touchdowns just once, over two touchdowns just once when he had five in week eight. He's averaged 14.1 fantasy points per game over his past four. But I think that I'm going to buy in on this game here against two divisional rivals with at least full season paces that look good. You know, defenses that can be beaten a bit, two capable quarterbacks here. So I think he's great for tournaments, but of course I'm not necessarily looking there in cash games. I do love Baker Mayfield, and I would play him in cash games in this matchup. We talked about him, or at least you talked about him in a lot of detail already, given this matchup, but the Panthers 27th in adjusted pass defense, 20th in passing success rate allowed. Mayfield's been, you know, a pretty steady option, even, you know, with being matchup dependent still. And the Panthers are just 27th in quarterback hit rate, according to fantasydata.com. So I think Mayfield's going to have time to throw. We might not know who to stack him with, but he does have some playmakers who can move the ball, especially Nick Chubb and Duke Johnson out of the backfield. So even if I don't stack him with the right guy or stack him with anyone at all, I think Baker at 7,500 is certainly worth the price.
Yeah, I will stack in cash, but I don't need to necessarily, whereas I do need to stack in tournaments. And Baker by himself in cash is in play for me. My first love is Andrew Luck. Same game as you talked about with Deshaun Watson. It's two high-paced teams playing indoors, and they have something on the line here. Luck is coming off of a down game, but he was outside and facing the fourth-ranked pass defense. Now he is inside facing the 16th-ranked pass defense. So totally different situation for Andrew Luck this week compared to last week. And prior to that game, he had eight straight games with three or more touchdowns. And it's going to be difficult to run on this Texans team. The Colts are not a great rushing team to begin with, but you know, tough to run against J.J. Watts. So I'm thinking a lot of volume again for Luck this week. He is in a good script for passing, so he will be one of my favorite quarterbacks this week, and he is also in play for cash games. My second love is Tom Brady. Again, I have to watch the weather here, but really good spot, assuming that doesn't bring things down too much. This Patriots offense is finally healthy, but for whatever reason, Brady's salary is down to $7,600. He's facing the Dolphins here. They're ranked 28th against the pass. Xavien Howard sounds like he'll miss this game. And, you know, I've seen some buzz on Twitter this week about how Brady struggles in Miami. But two of the past six games for him in Miami have come without Rob Gronkowski. A couple of them were week 17. It's a stupid stat. Don't look into it. Also, Brady, not great fantasy outputs. Sorry. But his touchdown rate is 4.6%. That is his second lowest it has been since 2004. And he should get regression now that the offense is healthy. Maybe I went too far, but it's a stupid stat. I don't, yeah. Anyway, Brandon, you take it away. Who are you liking at running back this week?
I mean, I never really buy into, like, you know, 8 years ago, Tom Brady did this against the Dolphins.
When Jason Taylor was their stud defensive lineman, here's what Tom Brady did. This is totally representative of what you'd expect in week 14 of 2018. Come on.
Yeah. I'm going to move past it and talk about Ezekiel Elliott. He's actually the only stud running back who's a home favorite. There are some pace and over-under concerns here, but I don't particularly care. And, you know, I just said that I don't, you know, particularly care about past performances. But, you know, back in week 10, which is pretty recent, he had 33.7 FanDuel points against the Eagles. 19 carries, 151 yards, and a touchdown on the ground. 7 targets, 6 catches, 36 yards, and another touchdown. He has 4 straight top 7 finishes, which is, of course, a season-long stat, but it just shows his consistency on a weekly basis. And the Eagles, just 28th in adjusted rush defense on the full season. I also love Alvin Kamara at 8,300. We have not talked about him nearly enough, at least for my liking. He's been a bit of a dud lately, with 10.3 and 11.2 fantasy points on 15 and 22 opportunities respectively, but he's still playing his usual snaps, 65 and 67% in those two games. The Bucs are 29th in rushing success rate, 22nd in target success rate allowed to running backs. I think it's a bounce back spot for Kamara. And if there are win concerns, that would lead me to believe that he could just get some more targets out of the backfield, and Kamara in open space, certainly something that I can buy into. I also love Jeff Wilson. I talked about him in detail already, but you know, there are a lot of other options at running back if you're spending down, and I don't want to get too weird with too many low-priced running backs. He's the only one other than your third love, unless you change it on the fly, who I like a good bit.
I'll still be in there. You're good.
He played 72.4% of the snaps last week, 24 opportunities, lots of targets lined up out wide. That is very impressive to me for a back priced just 5,600 with a home matchup against the 23rd ranked rush defense by success rates. And, you know, again, the 9 targets last week, and the Broncos are bottom 5 in success rate allowed to running backs. So there's a lot to like for Jeffrey Wilson this week.
I agree. With Kamara, too, the Buccaneers have been shredded specifically by pass-catching backs, including Kamara, including Tariq Cohen, Christian McCaffrey. So I think that's another boost up for Alvin Kamara. Not usually on him, but I think I am this week. My first love is Christian McCaffrey. I do like Zeke more for cash games, but I want to talk about McCaffrey here because the Browns are 22nd in success rate allowed to opposing running backs, according to some guy named Brandon Gadula on Twitter. They allowed 100 rushing yards to Lamar Miller last week, 89 to Joe Mixon before that, and both those games were after they got Joe Schobert back. And now, Larry Ogunjobi, who is a force in the middle of their defensive line, he missed practice Wednesday with a bicep issue. I bet he misses. If Denzel Ward can't play, it's another boost to the Panthers' offense. And McCaffrey has 25% of the Panthers' targets and 35% of their red zone targets from week 8 on. He also has 50 receiving yards in 5 straight games. He is Adam Humphries with a whole lot of carries to boot. So McCaffrey, awesome, awesome play. My second love is Nick Chubb. I want to talk more about him here. He should benefit from Baker being in a plus matchup. Carolina is 15th against the rush based on number of fires metrics. Not a great matchup, but Chubb has value beyond that because he has at least 3 targets and 30 receiving yards in 3 straight games. And I don't expect he will carry any ownership this week at $7,700. So give me Nick Chubb again at home. My third love is Spencer Ware, the guy Brandon alluded to as being below 7,000 and trustworthy, because last week Spencer Ware did play 71% of the snaps for the Chiefs. He had 3 carries inside the 5-yard line. So they did use some Damian Williams, but when they get in close, it's going to be Spencer Ware. The Chiefs have a 30-point implied team total. They're home favorites. He's $6,400. And I am guessing people will avoid Spencer Ware due to this matchup, and I don't think they should. So I like Spencer Ware at $6,400 for sure. Let's transition now to the wide receivers, Brandon. Who are you looking at there?
Julio Jones. I kind of love all these high-priced receivers, which I don't generally do, but I especially love Antonio Brown. I want to make sure I have exposure to him. Devontae Adams, DeAndre Hopkins, but you know, Jones does travel, which I, you know, don't ever prefer, but he had a down week last week, and he historically bounces back pretty strong after down weeks. The Packers are, you know, 7th in target success rate allowed to receivers, but 19th in fantasy points per target because they do let up the 3rd highest success rate on deep balls this year. Of course, the weather concerns could push me off of Julio Jones, but then I'll just, you know, go to Antonio Brown or Devontae or Hopkins or whoever I have the money for. You know, he's got 10.4 targets per game in 5 post-bye games, so his workload is still high. You know, and again, the Packers aren't good on against deep balls, and Jones has 53% of the Falcons' deep targets. So I think he's a splash play guy who could get overlooked because he had a down week last week and because he's on the road.
The other two things about Julio, sorry, before I want to toss this in here. His last two games on the road and outdoors, 107 in a touchdown, 121 in a tutty. So, yeah, he's a good game stat guy there.
Thanks, Jim. I like that.
I'm just complimenting you on your good picks, Brandon.
How about, all right, I'll talk about Julian Edelman, and then you can tell me about how it was a good pick.
I already did, so we're good there. I also approve of your third guy, so we're good.
All right. Edelman. Actually, you know, I wasn't being sarcastic. It was nice to get reaffirmed on someone like Julio in this spot.
Thanks, straight man.
Sending good vibes on this podcast. Yeah, that's exactly what we do. Yeah. Julian Edelman didn't send good vibes last week with his dud, where he had 7.5 FanDuel points on 8 targets. That was his lowest fantasy outing for him this year. But he played 89% of the snaps. He's been, you know, that's like a top 24 receiver in 6 of his past 7 games with at least 12.1 FanDuel points in every game since his second game back. So he's been very consistent, and that puts him in cash game territory. Miami is 12th in fantasy points per target allowed out of the slot, but Julian Edelman has a 24% target share, 8.5 per game since his return. I don't particularly perceive any issues with the weather. Because of his sort of low ADOT, and if anything, maybe it boosts him up from a target perspective. I also love Courtland Sutton. You know, obviously the Manny Sanders injury opens up a lot. He had a 20% target share since the Demaryius Thomas trade. Came through last week in a good spot. I think this is another good spot this week. San Francisco's 19th in deep ball defense. I actually liked him a lot, even with Sanders there. Sutton, I think, should avoid Richard Sherman often enough. He's easily their best playmaker on the outside. So I think he's a great play at 5,600 this week.
And he's same price as Chris Godwin, which should draw ownership away too. So there you go. There's your plug for Courtland Sutton. My first love is Devontae Adams in the same game as Julio. I should mention DeAndre Hopkins is brilliant this week. He's got 36% of their targets since the Demaryius Thomas trade. So in on him. But talking Devontae Adams, he's got 28% of the Packers' targets, 37% of their deep targets, and 45% of their red zone targets. There have been 3 games this year where Devontae Adams has not scored, which is absurd by itself. But in those 3 games, he had 81 yards, 133 yards, and a buck 66. Dude's stupid good. The Falcons are good against outside wide receivers, but Devontae Adams is matchup proof. He has done all this while facing Patrick Peterson, Xavier Rhodes, Tre'Davious White, Darius Slay, Xavier Howard, and Stephon Gilmore. So Devontae Adams, $8,700, yes. My second love is Amari Cooper. I think most people in this game will gravitate towards Zeke here, but I do like Dak, and I do like Amari as well. Since the trade, Amari Cooper has 26% of the overall targets, 26% of the deep targets, and 29% of the red zone targets. You're putting all that up against an Eagles secondary that is still super banged up. Cooper is $6,900. He is a direct pivot off of Zeke, so I think Cooper is a really fun play who I have not mentioned yet. My third love, chalk, but I don't care. It's Chris Godwin. Sounds like no DeSean Jackson again this week. And Godwin last week with no D-Jax had 6 targets. One of those was deep. 2 were in the red zone, topped 100 yards for the second time in 4 games. And he will not see Marshawn Lattimore. So should funnel a couple extra targets his way. He's $5,600. And for that, you are getting a cheap, high ceiling player in what could be a fun game. So Chris Godwin week part 2 in week number 14. Let's move on down to tight end, Brandon. Who are you looking at there?
Travis Kelce.
All right.
8,000. I don't spend up at tight end often, but I think it's at He's least not time. A tight end, so. I think it's time. Yeah. maybe you read my notes, but Kelce's been the top scoring tight end in 4 of the past 5 weeks. Tight ends have been sort of the one path to success against the Ravens this year. Baltimore's 20th in target success rate, 24th in fantasy points per target allowed to the position. Kelce's had at least 23.7 fantasy points in 3 of his past 4. You know, I don't hate Zach Ertz either if I'm spending, you know, top dollar, but I do think I'm going to prioritize Kelce, at least in enough lineups this week where I don't feel underexposed. And I mean, look, if Kelce were a wide receiver priced at 8,000, I'd play him and, you know, face it, he's a wide receiver playing tight end. So that that makes it a whole lot different for me. I'm not spending up on someone who's going to get, you know, one target or something like that. Yeah. I also love David Njoku, who could get one target here, which is sort of the whole point of feeling comfortable spending up for Travis Kelce. The Panthers are most vulnerable against the tight ends relative to any other position. They're 29th in target success rate allowed, 30th in fantasy points per target. Njoku snaps 80.7, so 81, and his routes at 80% spiked back up last week. If we're looking to stack someone with Baker, I think I'd probably just look first to Njoku to cover up one of my tight end, or, you know, cover up tight end in my roster.
The Ravens have also not faced any good tight ends, basically. There aren't any good tight ends, but they haven't faced any. So I think that the Ravens. We're talking about Kelce. Like, they haven't faced a Kelce-esque dude all year. There aren't a lot of Kelce-esque dudes, but like they've still been not great against position. So Kelce's really fun. My first love is Gronk. He's played all but two snaps in the past 2 weeks since their bye week. He is $6,200, and I think that Eric Ebron will be pretty chalky again this week, which is deservedly so, but it's a direct pivot off of Ebron down to Gronk. Gronk has 18% of the team's targets in his past two games, and the Dolphins have allowed three tight end touchdowns against the Colts with Ebron their first game, and Jack Doyle. They allowed two to Jordan Thomas, two to Michael Roberts, and Gronk may not be his old self, but he's probably better than Michael Roberts and Jordan Thomas. So Gronk at 62, very, very tempting. I do like Ebron as well, but Gronk is very fun. My second love is Vance McDonald at $5,500 because having no James Conner and potentially no Ryan Switzer should open up intermediate targets for Vance. And the Raiders have been shredded by tight ends again this year. They allowed 168 yards to Travis Kelce last week, a couple of touchdowns, 108 to George Kittle, 70 to Jack Doyle, and McDonald is $5,500. He gets you cheap access to a passing offense that I like a lot this week and should throw a ton. So Vance, make him dance on Sunday, and I'm excited to use him once again. Let's finish up here, Brandon, with the defenses. Who are you looking at there?
There are kind of a lot of ways to go. There's the Chargers, there's the Bills, but if I'm spending down, which I try to do if I can, I'm going to look at Arizona. They're 3,700. They help me pay up for other positions, and with how volatile a defense is, I kind of just like to take the savings wherever I feel comfortable. And so I'll be having some exposure to the Cardinals this week. They're third in sack rate. They're I think fifth in home sack rate, but their sack rate goes up at home, which is pretty typical. And they host the Lions, who have averaged just 16.6 points per game over their past six. They have one playmaker at this point. So I think that Arizona at home could be one of the probably the most popular defense for me this week.
We hadn't mentioned that game the entire podcast, but I think that's okay. We also hadn't mentioned Jets and Bills. It's going to be Josh Allen chalk week. Before we close up, what are you doing, Josh Allen, as chalk?
So he can run the ball, and he slings it deep almost like twice the league average rate. Mm. The Jets are pretty solid against deep balls, if my recollection serves.
Jamal Adams is good, yes.
I think that he's fine, but I think that he's overpriced. If he were like 7,000 or below still, that'd be one thing. But he's 7,400. He's $200. He's $200 cheaper than Tom Brady. he is $100 cheaper than Lamar Jackson and Baker Mayfield. Even if you have concerns with Jackson, I mean,
yeah, like he's going to be the chalk, and he has a high ceiling, but he also has a very low floor still. Like, he could throw 19 times in this game. So like, I'll have limited exposure to him, but that's all I can do. I will be very underweight on him. I will also probably be underweight on the Giants in tournaments because they are my love of defense, but I want to mention that I'll be underweight on them in tournaments because Landon Collins is on IR. That's a downgrade for their defense, and I think they'll be very popular. But in cash games, I'm going to use them. And my reasoning is Mark Sanchez. That should be all I need to say. So Giants in cash, underweight in tournaments. I think that I do like Arizona. Brandon mentioned them with the Lions seemingly tanking. I like Dallas at 37 in a stack with Zeke, given their pass rush and given the Eagles' woes up front so far this year. I like the Bills at 42. So there are good defenses you can pivot to away from the Giants, but I think they will be my play in cash games. Brandon, I think that the theme for this week is taking safety where you can get it, especially in cash games. There are a lot of tempting low price backs, but I think we both agree this is still a week to pay up a running back, regardless of that.
Yeah, I mean, this is a week two where teams are starting to do weird things. Mm-hmm. You know, we have the Falcons and Packers. Sounds like a great game on paper, but
right.
they don't really have anything to play for. That game could just bust. So taking the safety, like you said, taking, you know, the situations where we have very, very much a reason to believe that we know what to expect, that's going to matter a bit extra in week 14 and beyond.
And use exclusively players from the Big Ten. That is the other takeaway for this week. Don't forget to subscribe to the Number Fire Daily Fantasy Podcast. You can find that on Spotify, iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, the Google Play Store, and the TuneIn app. Brandon, if people have questions for you on Twitter, where can they find you there?
I'm at Gadula13, GDULA13.
And I am at Jim Sonnes, JimSannes. You can also follow the Number Fire Podcast Network at Number Fire Pods, PODS, as in podcast. We do want to thank you all for tuning in for today. Good luck with your Week 14 DFS lineups, and we'll talk to you again on Monday to recap all that went down. This has been the Heat Check Fantasy Podcast, powered by Number Fire.